My name's Danny. If you're visiting today, lovely to have you. I wonder where you were on Thursday night when that massive storm hit. I don't know if you've checked the details, but we got average February rainfall in about 2 hours. It's like a 10% of Sydney's average annual rainfall happened in just a few hours. I had to pick up Barnabas over at Concord, and it was just crazy on the roads. There were cars that were trapped in flooded water. I tried to come up with a strategy to take the high ground back from Breakfast Point to Croydon. So I'm like, oh, I'm so smart. I'll take Concord Road through to Parramatta Road. Start to see the blue and the red lights. Oh, okay, that's the police. Oh, that's because this is actually major flood zone. Parramatta Road was shut at North Strathfield. The road down to Strathfield Station was shut. There was just cars everywhere, and it was manic. I was chatting to a dad yesterday at cricket, and he was saying that he was in Melbourne for work, and all the flights, he sat on the tarmac for 2 hours as they were about to fly out, and then they decided, look, Sydney Airport's shut. And so every flight into Sydney was shut, and he was thinking, what am I going to do? He ended up sleeping on one of those plastic chairs in the airport before catching a flight to Newcastle. The next day, because all the flights to Sydney were chock-a-block, all the hotels he rang to try and get a bed for the night were full. Storms wreak havoc. And so in this passage today, we hear this very famous story of an actual storm. But as Caleb has alluded to, it's pointing towards the more metaphorical storms that come our way, the things that wreak havoc in our life, that at best are an inconvenience and at worst have massive ongoing consequences for our life. I wonder what the storms that are coming your way in your life are. Perhaps as a parent like me, it's your children's well-being. Are they going to get home after a late night out? Are they going to excel and be their best? How are they going to progress in their faith? Perhaps for you, the storms are rising financial pressures, bills that keep compounding, uncertainty about your financial sustainability, or perhaps even just the pragmatic of housing stress. The storms come in a whole range of ways that are really prevalent to our life, our relationship, uncertainty. Perhaps you've experienced a painful breakup. You're in the throes of deep loneliness, or you're in ongoing marriage strain that never really seems to lift. We follow Jesus. We come and gather here, but we are not oblivious to the fact that life brings hardships. There are circumstances where we get overwhelmed and where we respond in fear. It's almost this simultaneous, we trust Jesus, but we doubt deeply, and we ask, like we heard the disciples today, Lord, do you care about me? This event is one of the most vivid in Jesus' life and ministry. It's not merely a miracle that shows his power, it's a revelation of his identity, and perhaps even more significant for us, it exposes something about our hearts. And so this morning, we're going to be thinking about, the storm, Jesus, and what it means to live in faith. So beginning with the storm, we see in verse 35 that there's that remarkable detail that's accounted here. It's the kind of detail that is captured in an eyewitness account of an actual event. Jesus here is with his disciples. And remember, these are the people who've given up everything. They've left everyone else behind. But what we see here is that just because you're following Jesus, it doesn't prevent the storms coming your way. If we have a look there, it's not their initiative, but it's actually Jesus. Let us go over to the other side. He's directing them as to where he wants them to be. And so this storm that comes their way doesn't come because of their disobedience. They are actually in the storm because they are with Jesus. They are obedient to him. And so it's helpful for us to remember that faithfulness doesn't always guarantee ease in life. And so they're there on the river and there's a range of other boats. But then the storm comes and the boat starts to take on water. And well, where is Jesus in all this? He's sleeping. And so the question comes, do you actually care? And now this storm that arrived is one that would have been prevalent in those waters. The Sea of Galilee is surrounded by hills. And so as cold air rushes down the slopes, it collides with the warm air hovering over the water. And the storms that apparently occur there are quite violent and severe. But remember, at least a few of these disciples were experienced fishermen. They knew the water, they knew storms, yet in the circumstances, they are terrified. They know as fishermen that as water comes on board, that this is not just an inconvenience. This is a disaster on their doorstep. And so this storm is going to be revealing of their heart and not just their proximity to Jesus, but how they're going to respond to him. And so this storm would be an early revelation for the disciples about the path that would be following Jesus. You see, turmoil, animosity, they're not going to be anomalies in Jesus' ministry. In fact, opposition and unrest is going to be more prevalent than it is rare. And so these storms that arrive for the disciples and come our way too, they reveal faith. And so perhaps there's seasons in life where illness comes our way, we go in for a routine scan and what is revealed is a serious diagnosis. Suddenly our future, which felt secure, now seems fragile. Perhaps an ailment that we sort of think should improve just progresses into chronic pain, and despite prayer and medical treatment, there's no ease. And so questions about God's care and his purpose for us. There's going to be seasons where we experience deep personal loss, the death of loved ones, where we just feel empty in a way that shakes us of our confidence in God's goodness. Or perhaps there'll be a relationship that ends unexpectedly and the grief produces great confusion within us. And perhaps it's at work where we're confronted with a little meeting that results in us being retrenched. And perhaps it's a mistake that is exposed by others, which tarnishes our reputation and our ability to progress. Perhaps it's just a whole range of constant hardships, deep pain that ask us wondering whether God really cares about us. Friends, following Jesus doesn't excuse us from the effects of living in this broken world. And just like a storm like Thursday night sort of reveals the strength of the structure, I was keen to come in here on Friday, look at the corner where all the water comes down and see whether the roof held up. And to my thankfulness, there was no water there. So too the storms expose something of what it is that we're holding on to and whether or not that is God himself. So the disciples, their heart is exposed with this question, do you not care that we are perishing? And what we see here is not just a fear of drowning, but there's a little bit of suspicion here about Jesus' character, isn't there? Does Jesus actually really care about us? Like, we've sort of given up everything here. Is he trustworthy to keep following? Is he powerful enough to do something in this situation that deeply affects us? And so this is how our faith is revealed as the storms hit us. Do we actually believe in God? When our life collapses, when things that were hidden are revealed, where does our heart go? that feeling that God has abandoned us, that he can't really be in control, or if he is in control, then he surely doesn't care about us, because does he feel and see the pain and the constant resistance that we're experiencing? But perhaps most consistently, the storms reveal this illusion that we all have of being in control. Remember the disciples, they're skilled sailors, they're fishermen, but their competence cannot save them from the circumstances they're in. How do you respond when the illusion of you having control of life is exposed? How do you respond when there are situations that are clearly beyond your control? Well, our society says just make a sharper plan, get more efficient at managing the variables, prepare yourself. But storms can just dismantle self-reliance. And the storms reveal that we're never as secure as we think in this world. The disciples, these who are following Jesus, they've given up everything. They are overwhelmed. And we hear this cry of fear. And when fear rules our heart, it's very hard to trust. Because fear can help us reshape our reality. Fear leads us to magnify how big and savage this storm is. Afraid that you'll never be able to get another job. Afraid perhaps that you'll never be able to have a child. Afraid of whatever ... is your storm. The more you think about it, the bigger it becomes. And the problem with focusing on our circumstances that just builds our fear in what might happen is it actually shrinks our view of God. And so this is the problem in the boat. For the disciples, the waves, they look enormous, and Jesus looks pretty irrelevant. Friends, when storms come our way, the greatest danger isn't what they might do to us physically, financially, emotionally, relationally. Sure, waves threaten the body, but our greatest concern needs to be over the soul, which is where we need to consider Jesus in the middle of this. And yes, he's sleeping on a cushion, likely exhausted from teaching all day. And we see here again the humanness of Jesus, tired, vulnerable. He's not someone who's detached from living in this world, but his sleep surely communicates something, a trust in someone bigger than the storm that's around. While chaos on the boat intensifies, Jesus continues to rest. And it's no surprise that the calmest person on the boat is the person who knows God closest. You see, faith allows us to rest when fear wants us to just live in panic. And so then, being awakened in verse 39, Jesus does something extraordinary. He doesn't pray to his Father for help. He doesn't try and negotiate with God. God, if you can just calm this storm down, then I'll... No. He commands peace. Quiet. Be still. It's this language of rebuking the storm that's around. It's the similar language that's used to Jesus' interaction with the evil spirits. Jesus sees this storm as something hostile, and he orders it to submit to his voice. And immediately the wind stops and the sea becomes calm. In the Old Testament, the only one who controlled the wind and the waves is God himself. He's the one in Psalm 65 who stills the roaring waters, who rules the raging waves in Psalm 89, who's the one who's able to deliver the stormy waters in Psalm 107, And so Jesus here is revealing his identity. Hey, guys, do you see what I'm doing here? I'm doing the very work of the Creator. And the fact that the storm recognizes this voice is validation of Jesus' identity and his connection as Creator. There's also Old Testament allusions to Jonah, but sort of in a contrast. Whereas Jonah sort of had to be thrown overboard in the midst of the storm, at some level he was responsible for the storm's appearance because of his unbelief. Jesus here stays on the boat and speaks to the storm, and it obeys him. And so what happens after Jesus' intervention? Well, fear doesn't diminish, it just gets reoriented. The disciples are terrified. Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? You see, their picture of Jesus is now getting a lot sharper. He's not merely a teacher to guide them. They're in the very presence of the one who has divine power. And so this is the great question that carries through Mark's gospel. Who is this guy? As people are drawn to him, they are drawn with this question, who is this and how is that going to change my life? And so, as the disciples ponder this, the moment for reflection is the nature of their faith. After calming the storm in verse 40, Jesus turns to the disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? He doesn't rebuke them for waking him up. He rebukes their fear. He's basically saying, you guys are cowards. You've lost heart. You've given in to the circumstances around you. It's not that you needed more information. You've seen the miracles that I've started producing. The issue is trusting my power and my goodness. You see, the issue for the disciples is that they'd forgotten what they'd already seen and known. That Jesus is the one who could cast out demons. He healed the sick. He had a distinct authority in his words. But in the moment of the storm, that they forgot. And this is the great pressure on all of us who are seeking to live by faith, not sight. That in the moment we forget the grace that has been shown in the past. We forget what God has done, and so then we doubt what he might be able to do in our present circumstance. Friends, trusting in Jesus is pretty easy when your life is calm, but your faith is proven when the boat is literally sinking. Following Jesus is a life lesson in learning to trust. Trust him and his character, even when our circumstances seem to contradict what we think might be a good gift. And so we need to reflect on this big question. Do you still have no faith? Do you see that? Do you still, after all that they've seen, after all they've experienced and heard, their proximity to Jesus, friends, faith is not automatic. Faith needs to constantly be growing because we are constantly in new circumstances. The Christian life is a journey from fear towards ever-growing trust. Fear itself is not the problem. It's fearing the circumstances rather than the one who has the power over them. And the great hope that we have to place our faith in is someone who didn't just see storms at a distance, didn't just live from the high ground where he could change circumstances simply by the commands of his word. But as Mark's gospel accounts, Jesus walked into the storm. He experienced the harshness, not just of physical opposition, being ostracized by his friends, being mocked, but actually being separated from his Maker. On the cross, Jesus experienced the very judgment of God, death and separation. He experiences the ultimate chaos, but he does so that we might experience the ultimate peace. Friends, know that Jesus has experienced the fiercest storm imaginable. And so now we are never in the storm alone. And so our account finishes with this transition of fear in the right place. The disciples are terrified even though the waters are calm. They ask each other, "Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him?" Friends, it's a picture of awe. They've moved from seeing Jesus as small and irrelevant to starting to capture a glimpse of his might and majesty. And it's when we see Jesus for who he is that our circumstances can be placed in their right context. And so the question for us this morning is, do you still have no faith? Because it's going to be a question that we ask ourselves as we're confronted with sin that is habitual or mistakes that just sort of keep reoccurring. It is a question that God will ask us as we grip ourselves with fear over our new circumstance that we just think is so overwhelming. And so perhaps just a little graphic, I'm a visual learner, is when we realise that we are gripped with fear because of our circumstances, and that looks a whole range of different things. For some, it's like just about locking in and trying to eliminate all uncertainty. For others, it's to be a little bit manic and highly anxious. For others, it'll sort of be your like physical body or like shut down. Well, get on board the journey of faith. That's what that little carriage is about. Don't just live in fear. Get on board to sort of see how you can move from fear to faith. And so that when you're on board, it's helpful to sort of describe the circumstance. You know, what is going on in the situation that you're in? Write it down, describe all the factors. But then more importantly, start to try and discern where unbelief is showing up. In light of the storm that you're in, what is it about God that you're struggling to believe? Is your heart struggling to believe that he cares about you? Are you struggling to believe that he's present with you? Are you struggling to believe that he doesn't have power over this situation that's causing you so much fear? Are you struggling to believe that he is wise as you're trying to organize a strategy to get the outcome that you desire? Or are you struggling to trust in his timing? Because you're sort of like, no, God, this needs to happen now, because if I don't get this result now, then as unbelief is exposed, let's remember again, that's what the two hands are, about God's promise and his power. He is present with you no matter how heavy the rain is and how loud the thunder is or how frightening the lightning comes. And he's conquered sin and death, so your destiny is secure. He rules over all things and he's given himself for you. He has shown on the cross that he will not abandon you because he's given everything for you. Friends, as we look back and remember what Jesus has done, hopefully we get a bigger picture, a truer picture of who he is, and the circumstance gets a better perspective. That we can move from living by fear towards a greater trust. God, your character is good. I can't see how this situation is going to be resolved, but I can trust in you. Lord, I'm not alone because you promised to be with me by your Spirit. Father, you are good. This world is harsh and my life feels empty, but you've given a promise of an eternity where I will delight. Friends, when you're confronted with your fear, get on board the journey of growing in faith. And a key part of growing our view of Jesus is remembering what he's done. And so this morning we're going to do that. The Lord's Supper is a time where we remember again the sufficiency of what Jesus has done. You see, the great thing I think about the boat analogy situation is that despite rebuking their fear, Jesus doesn't discard them. Their faith is weak and their understanding is partial. Their trust in him is fragile, but he remains faithful. And so whilst we want to get on the journey from fear to faith, our hope isn't in the strength of our faith, but it's in the strength of the one whom we trust. The one who again speaks words of authority to the circumstances that are overwhelming us. Quiet, be still. And so the calming of the storm did point us towards this ultimate storm. And so we remember Jesus and his death and resurrection. And so now for all who call Jesus their Lord, who don't just come to Jesus as a helper or as a guide, but who see him in all of his fullness and say, you are Lord of my life, I will invite you to come and to take the bread and remember that his body was given for you, and to drink the cup and remember that his blood cleanses you.